Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 327 for comics originally released on November 13th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Batgirl number 25. This is part of the zero-year event in the Batman family of titles. And this is taking place, 5, 6 years ago, roughly?
Yeah.
6 years ago, it says. Before we start into this issue, I've got one little tiny question about the whole zero-year. Did I miss the issue where the whole blackout and all those things happened? I mean, I'm sure it must have gotten it and read it, but it's not really sticking in my mind as to kind of what the trigger event was. Or did that happen before, like, the Villain Month stuff?
I think it was Batman 25 or 24. 24, the end of the last Batman, right? Or the...
Okay.
I think that was, like, either alluded to. I don't know if we
got an explosion and then the lights went out or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was something deliberate by the Riddler that happened, and
that's
I believe
right.
it was in.
That's right.
And I don't think they made a big deal out of it, but it did occur.
Well, and that's the thing, is it doesn't feel like they've made a big deal out of it, but now everything, it's a big deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Exactly.
That story point didn't have enough resonance with me. I mean, I know everything's blacked out, but they've been talking about that in the solicits for a while. That part I think they could have executed better in the whole zero-year thing.
And it's possible that they could have just suggested that that occurred, and I put it in the last Batman issue in my head because I'm easily manipulated. So that's possible as well. Maybe it wasn't in there. We could go back and find out, but we'd have to pause the podcast.
That would be bad. How about we have listeners tell me what I have already forgotten about having just read it a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
I read for enjoyment, not trivia contests, because clearly I would fail at them miserably. But it's funny because, again, everything is talking about, oh, it's blacked out, there's the storm, there's all this going on, and I'm like, you know, I know what's going on, but shouldn't have been a really big to-do that it was happening?
Or was it in the Riddler Villain Month issue?
No, the Villain Month was he was just a mark in time.
Yeah.
Because at that point it was tying into the Forever Evil and Batman was in theory dead and he was waiting for him to come back.
Yeah.
Now that's cynical, even for a villain. I'll just wait for the hero to come back to life. That's just funny. I thought this was a good issue dealing with the storm, the blackout, and all that kind of stuff. But there was something about this issue that just felt a little bit light, almost, I mean, like we're in the middle of a disaster movie like you'd find on the Sci-Fi Channel or something like that. But we've skipped the setup because, again, it's happened. We don't really see it happen. We don't get any real resolution to the big disaster aspect of it. We just get a little slice of it. It's like, again, this struck me as about a 15, 20 minute chunk of a disaster movie. And a decent amount, but more a side aspect than the main plot, if you know what I mean. Would you kind of agree with that, disagree with that? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it was, you could definitely label this maybe partially filler. And it did kind of seem kind of contrived with Henry or whatever his name was. You kind of saw that coming a pretty far away. That was well telegraphed.
Do you think we're going to see him again?
Maybe.
I mean, I'm not sure if I want to see him again. I mean, he was interesting enough character, but a little cliche. But if we don't see him again, I'm kind of wondering, well, what the hell was the point of this? And if we do, it's like, oh, geez, that's obvious. They're in a no-win situation with me on that one, I think.
Yeah, and I don't know if I would have left my house to go tromping around through the storm either.
You know, when the whole flood warning came and she was getting evacuated, Barbara Gordon there, with James Gordon, my first take on that was it was corrupt cops.
Yeah.
Clear the houses out, loot them, move on. I was disappointed we didn't get that because to me it seemed so, I don't say obvious, but such a natural go-to kind of a plot line.
Yeah. I mean, you needed it for the story to actually occur. You couldn't do 22 pages of her watching television. with her brother.
No, but if she got shooed out with her brother to the disaster thing, has to leave him there and say, wait, we forgot something, comes back, realizes the entire neighborhood's being robbed, that could have been a lot of fun.
Well, I like that. I like that better.
I mean, what we got here wasn't bad, but I didn't feel we got tons of payoff, tons of great story. Actually, this issue reminded me of an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, where they had picked up, and I forget the details of the episode, but they picked up a bunch of colonists on a planet that was about to get wiped out. Their sun was going to explode, or I forget, you know, what the disaster on the planet was. The colonists or whatever were kind of low-tech or whatever. So what they wound up doing was beaming them up to the holodeck, marching them around the holodeck for a while as if they're walking off to a new land, and then beaming them down to a new planet once they got there. And it was kind of a, okay, I get what they're doing, but it was almost a little bit of a pointless exercise all the way around. And there was an aspect of this where I felt they were kind of marching people around for no great reason. The issue lacked clear motivation for the characters as to why they were doing some of what they were doing. And was it just me, or did Barbara's jacket look too much like a Next Generation outfit?
Yeah, I could see that. And it, you know, I read it back to back with Nightwing, and it kind of felt like they could have been companion pieces, like, you know, since they're tied together with their little theme. Mm-hmm. And but there's no water in Nightwing, in the Nightwing Zero Year, and you would think with this much flooding on one part of the city that the other part of the city would at least have some kind of relevance to that as well.
Well, when the whole sinkhole thing happens and you get the one page where it's like a tsunami just hit or something.
Yeah.
Is it just me or is Gotham City like a magnet for natural disasters?
Yeah, it's it is.
But between that and the crazy supervillains and stuff like that, I mean, why would anyone live there? I just don't get it.
And all the dirigibles that are floating around.
Mm-hmm.
In Batman 25, which came out this week, there was like a panel mention or something about Wayne may have supplied those.
Yes. Yes. They gave the origin of all of those as, you know, he donated them or he got them for the fleet for the city or whatever. And it's interesting because I think this harkens back towards the Batman animated series, which I think was one of the key places that really established the Zeppelin, the dirigible, as a ubiquitous common sight, both for Gotham City in general and for the Gotham police.
Okay. That was, I thought he donated dirigible. Yeah, not,
he's rich.
There's a ton of them.
Oh, yeah. The one panel where there's, geez, like 24 or something.
Yeah.
They have a very crowded skyline, not counting the buildings even. It's crazy. The whole Cold Light Island stuff, I don't really recall ever having been established before. If they want to chalk up new parts of the landmarks and stuff or new lay of the land for Gotham City, that's cool. I mean, New 52 and all that. But there was an aspect of the story that I found enjoyable. It was good. I thought it set up Barbara as a heroic figure of sorts, foreshadowing how she could and would become Batgirl. There was an aspect of her brother that was almost like a plot device. He was a prop in the story. And given how interesting of a character he has been in this series and elsewhere in the DC universe lately, I was surprised how, like, zero characterization he got in this issue.
Oh, yeah, he was pretty silent. I don't know if he uttered a word throughout it. I'm not sure.
I think once. But man, I'm flipping through trying to find it and having a hard time. Yeah, he was physically there, but so disconnected and whatnot. Oh, after the flooding, he's like, just leave them, they'll drown. We're okay, kind of a thing. That was the
yep, he had there like it is.
Two dialogue balloons. He gets a little bit before the flooding, but that's about it. And it could have been almost anybody who had done those lines of dialogue. So it seemed like some missed opportunities here in terms of characterization, in terms of some depth. Again, what we got wasn't bad, but it wasn't impressive, at least to me.
Yeah, I thought it worked well for tying into this greater story.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it worked well as a companion piece to Nightwing. They felt, I mean, I'm not reviewing them as a tandem, but they did feel like they were in sync, and that makes sense because, you know, they have that thread that runs between them. I thought the art was fine.
The art was good here, yeah.
And I enjoyed it. But I would just say it was an okay read. And yeah. It was kind of fun in places. So for that, I'd give it a strong 3 and probably not a 4. I would give it a strong 3.
Yeah, I can't give this a 4. Again, the art's good. The line work's good. The execution of the story is very competent and stuff. There were aspects of the story that I don't think it was inspired, but it was average. I mean, it's not one of those where I'm thinking, geez, this falls apart. It doesn't make sense or anything of the sort. But when I felt like there were better plot points to be had, I was a little disappointed with this. But I think you've got a great point that it fit in the 0 year aspect very well. And did a good job there. So for me, it's very much a 3 out of 5, and there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah. Fernando Passerine, is on pencils. I don't recognize the name, but I'm sure he's done some stuff. And, is this Marguerite Bennett taking over this title?
I would have to look up the solicits. I'm not sure. But neither name really rings any bells with me. Not that that says much.
Mm-hmm.
I was impressed with the art. The only thing about the art that didn't entirely work for me, and it wasn't that it was badly drawn, it was what was drawn. Barbara's hair was incredibly short.
Yeah. That was to show that it was 5 to 6 years ago.
But I'm assuming she's going to become Batgirl in the not-too-distant future, and Batgirl has always been shown with long hair.
Yeah.
So, given how short it is, it seems like it would take at least, I don't know how long, you know, it would take, I mean, I'm a year or two at least.
Yeah, I would think that a good year's growth to get where she is now.
So, I don't know, it just, the hairstyle seemed a little odd, but again. Decent read, not something I would suggest people have got to go rush out and get, but as far as tie-ins to like the 0 year stuff, it was good.
And definitely. if you're enjoying any of the 0 year stuff, this is not something you should skip. You should actually include this one as well because it was kind of fun.
Well, and if you've been reading the Batgirl title, it's not like they shanghaied it for something completely unrelated. I felt this was good backstory for the character. A little bit of implied backstory for Commissioner Gordon. Again, they really missed the boat with James Gordon Jr., which is disappointing. Shall we move on to our other Marvel book?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is Fearless Defenders number 11. Now, this one promises a new status quo for Marvel's warrior women. This was a good issue, but not a great issue in my mind. In theory, like I said, it starts a new status quo for the title and the characters. And the characters are kind of a mixed bag of various female characters that we've seen. You know, it's got Misty Knight, Valkyrie, Moonstar, Danny Moonstar from The New Mutants, Clea from the Doctor Strange stuff, Eliza Bloodstone from New Wave, among other places, Hippolyta, and, you know, one or two other characters that are new and stuff. And, you know, new status quo. I'm not sure how many more issues are left of this series. I'm thinking the next issue might be the last.
Yeah, I think that in the back matter it referred to this show. This is ending, and you know, we love it. We're sorry to see it go, but it's over. So we did it again. Every time we review something, it dies.
Do you know how far back that trend goes? Very first issue or episode of the Weekly Comic Spotlight. We reviewed, what was that? The indie book we reviewed that first week was Foxwood Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
Never came out again. So, I mean, I'm not saying we got the kiss of death or anything, but sometimes we pick stuff that's just not long for this world.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like reading stuff that's diverse. I like giving things a shot. And I think it's good to review stuff like that because that way people will know when this gets collected, should they pick up Fearless Defenders.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's one more. So there's one more. The next issue, it says, is the Cosmic Climax, and then it also refers to the book's cancellation. Tweets and letters on the book's cancellation are starting to come in the letters page.
I'm not really surprised this is getting canceled or ending because it's an all-female team, which I think is a little bit of a uphill battle in terms of sales. And this issue in particular felt a little I mean, it was almost like an issue between arcs. Like, if it hadn't been canceled, the next issue would kick off the major arc or whatever. This was kind of that downtime between, that breather issue sort of a thing. And I guess the crux of it for me is I couldn't find anything in this issue where I'm thinking, wow, somebody has just got to read it because, you know, X happens in this issue.
Well, there was some ladies kissing.
Okay.
Is that not enough? Not enough for $3.99?
Not enough for me to recommend a book for $3.99. And again, it's not like it had anything bad or whatever. Although where the pages meet in that two-page spread when they're celebrating was not pulled off as well as it could have been. Again, what we got wasn't bad, but I didn't feel we got something that was a must-read issue either. And I think this is a book that never really found its footing, never really found its audience. And some of what they're doing here with Hippolyta seems to echo some of the plot points over in Wonder Woman, who in that universe is the daughter of, you know, with, in this case, Hippolyta potentially becoming the new god of war or whatever, like Wonder Woman just did. That's not a problem. It's just, you know, ironic. This had some minor moments of characterization, but it really felt overall like a little bit of a formulaic issue. We'll open with a party, we'll get a little subplot, some character bits, you know, somebody will attack, we'll have the people power up, fight, and end on like a potential turning point, you know, issue for the characters or whatever. And it felt a little lacking in something, and I'm not entirely sure what. I mean, did you feel the same way, or did it click with you?
I see what you're saying. I did see the similarities to Wonder Woman, and thought, you know, this book could use a good Wonder Woman, because the thing that I like so much about Wonder Woman was how well she was written, mm-hmm. and how strong that character was. And so there was definitely a character in there that you could really get behind and root for, and be a part of. And then they had interesting supporting characters that added flavor to the story. And this was just all supporting characters, and there wasn't that one character that stood out. And I think all these characters, while there were some interesting things about all of them, mm-hmm. or most of them, they were spread thin because there were, you know, half a dozen or so featured in this book.
Almost a dozen, yeah.
Yeah. And it lacked that focus and that one kind of rallying character to get behind, because there were so many interesting things going on, but none of them rose up above the kind of storm there and really helped. I mean, I like some of the battles with the creatures were fun, and the party scenes were fun, and some of the dialogue was kind of fun, but in the end it's kind of fluffy and light.
Yeah.
And there's no substance there.
Exactly. It's not bad, but it's insubstantial. For me, the bit with the monsters, I mean, you go to the staple page with the staple, you get the monsters attacking. Granted, there are a few more monsters than normal, but that reminds me of kind of a scene in like a Power Rangers or Super Sentai thing, or, you know, Pacific Rim even, you know, where the monster shows up and it's like, oh, destroy the city sorts of thing. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
The next thing we get is essentially everybody doing their morphing sequence to power up into, you know, in this case, whoever they are, but in the Power Rangers, it would be in that, or the people hopping into the mechs or whatever to Jaegers or whatever to go fight the monster. And we get the rush forward to attack and stuff, the calling of Brightwind, the calling of the Zords type thing. It's like, come on. It felt, and maybe I'm unusual that I read it that way, and most people who don't follow the Power Rangers Super Sentai stuff wouldn't have made that connection at all, and I've totally ruined the book for them, in which case, I apologize, I guess. Read more Super Sentai, or watch more Super Sentai. Anyways, there was something where it felt more like they were going through the motions than getting me invested and hooked on any of the characters.
Yeah, and but there are some good stuff in here, mm-hmm. and I could see that it, with that one character, and if it's Hippolyta, maybe, if they would have maybe added a little more depth to her, she could have maybe carried the book a little better, but she just didn't have enough time to do so. It didn't have enough screen time, you know?
I think if they had added or swapped out a few characters, if we had maybe She-Hulk any of them almost, or Storm, or Kitty Pryde, Rogue, one of the major, you know, female X-Men characters, to kind of help anchor this book a little. Because really, the most, I'm trying to think who would be the most marketable, of who is the name, you know, anchor character for this title?
Mm-hmm.
Misty Knight? No, not really. She's as much a supporting cast member of the Iron Man Power Man, Iron Fist Power Man stuff.
Well, my favorite person was the regular person, the Dr. Annabelle Riggs character, the adventurer.
Oh, yeah, she's great.
She was great, but she needed more time, and it, you know, bring her to the forefront a little bit. And, you know, not all 8 to 12 people, characters that are in this book need to be, you know, equally shown, because we need somebody to step up and be the character that you want to check out. And everybody else can be, you know, background and flesh out the story and add flavor to it. But you needed a, you know, one or two, like a nice 1-2 punch or something.
I just think they could have picked a few characters that would have had a bigger draw. And even if they're more in the background and not the key players, or rotated through the book, you know, that mm-hmm. might have been enough to keep it around a little longer. I like what they were trying to do. I think this was nice to spotlight characters who often don't get much time in the spotlight. I agree with the whole, what they're doing with Hippolyta, trying to get the whole Amazon thing going. There's a lot of potential there for Marvel. And again, this wasn't a bad issue. It just wasn't a great one either. And these days, if you want a book to stick around long term, it really needs to be a little more impressive than this.
Yeah, the art by Will Sliney was really pretty good. And Colin Bunn, who I know him from somewhere, and I can't place it right now. I'm on the spot and I can't place it, but his dialogue I thought was really good in places. The whole story didn't really kind of do it for me, but the art was pretty solid. And, you know, this thing is okay. But you could read it and you could not read it and it's ending. So, yeah, you know, I don't think you're going to lose anything by not reading it. So, I get to give it a 2.
Interesting. I mean, to me, low 3.
Yeah.
It's again, not something I can really recommend to somebody. I think if you like some of the characters and want to follow them, this is a good read. It's decent. It's this particular issue's light, but not bad. I mean, the couple of pages we get, with Ren and Annabelle and stuff, those were good pages. I mean, 3 pages of the story though, devoted to subplot characterization type thing, that if you've only read this issue, I don't think really makes much sense. But if you've read the series, it's like, okay, that's fun. It's something that, again, I like what they're trying to do. I just don't think they quite pulled it off.
Yeah. It had some problems in execution.
I guess from you, the execution was fine. It was more what they chose to execute. and the lack of substance. I couldn't find anything in there that made that really feel like a must-read issue. I think you might be able to read the previous issue and the next issue, skipping over this and not miss much at all. And to me, that's not a good sign for an issue.
No.
Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is Unity number 1 from Valiant. This is their crossover book, team book. I'm not quite sure what would be the best way to phrase it or whatnot. What'd you think of this one?
I wanted to like it. And it started off strong. I liked the photojournalist character a lot.
Yeah.
I thought she was good. And then it kind of lost me a little as it went through. We got a lot of characters that seemed very similar, and then some characters that seemed incredibly important to the story and actually held the same name as the book, and then they'd kind of fade away and aren't in the book anymore. So I'm kind of at a loss at that point as to what am I reading? What am I going to be reading here? And you know, some of these characters were probably introduced in other books or in, you know, previous Valiant incarnations back in the 90s that I just don't know. And that might have added to my enjoyment if I would have known who they were and everything.
Which characters did you not know?
Like the metal guy.
Oh, Exo?
Yeah. You don't know.
Yeah, him. If you don't know who Exo is, that I could definitely see that being an issue. I thought they did a good job introducing Harada and kind of his group. An okay job with the Eternal Warrior. They gave the backstory for Exo, but not in a way... It was more exposition than kind of get to know the character.
Yeah,
but exactly. He's got his own book, and it was the first one they launched, so not a completely unreasonable expectation that people would be more familiar with him than you are. But seeing whereas the whole thing is, let's gang up on this guy. Yeah, if you don't know who he is, you don't know why they're going to gang up on him, and why would you care? I can definitely see that being an issue.
Art was really nice. I thought it was well done. I'm not sure. Let me flip back there and see who that is. And Matt Kent is a guy who I really, really like his stuff. I love what he's doing in Mind Management over at Dark Horse. And it's just phenomenal. It's phenomenal writing. And, you know, the Bloodshot Zero issue that he read, I loved and raved about. He's done some hit or miss issues over during Villain Month. And some of the other books that he's popped in and out on in DC. I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but he's written a lot lately, and some better than others. I think he might have done a Justice League book or something, too. I keep thinking maybe he did. But this was, for me, it wasn't some of his strongest stuff.
I can see that.
Doug Braithwaite is the artist.
The art was good. It wasn't one that made me think, wow, this is brilliant, I'll get it just for that. But it certainly was enjoyable, didn't get in the way in the story at all or anything. There were a few things here. I mean, this wasn't exactly what I was expecting in some respects, but in others, it kind of was. I guess I was wanting a little more unity in terms of, I don't know, maybe gathering the whole team together and stuff like that than kind of what we got. As you kind of alluded to, there was a bit of a fake out in terms of the direction they were going, and then, oh, we're not going that way, which I don't think was a good move.
For issue one. Not for issue one.
Not for issue one. Get some issues on, you know, out first, and then, you know, do a left turn or something. But before the trajectory's even kind of set, before the book's built up any momentum, doing that kind of a fake out, you run the risk of people thinking, well, why the hell did you even introduce me to these characters? I want to know what the book's about. And I'm suspecting there was a second fake out in the issue, but I don't know for certain yet. This is something that could have and should have served as just a brilliant gateway title into the Valiant universe. And I think it was an okay issue to get into Valiant, but I think they could have done a better job, like I said earlier, really introducing you to Exo and getting his side of things. And I think the photojournalist was a good first step in that area. I hope we see more of that character. I thought that was a great way to start the issue, and I'd read those pages before because they were preview pages in other books. But really, I think people should be reading this if they want to follow the big picture of the Valiant universe, or if they're reading Exo Man of War, or if they want to follow the Eternal Warrior and or the Harbinger characters. I thought this was a decent issue with a fair amount of story, but it also left me a little, not dissatisfied, but not overly satisfied either. And frankly, I left it thinking they had cheated on one key aspect of the story. And again, I'm that supposition on my part, I could be wildly mistaken. And future issues will tell.
And I would think if you are like me and reading Quantum and Woody and Archer and Armstrong, that you could probably skip this. And it wouldn't hurt you. Unless it's going to get a lot better down the road. And what I'm looking forward to, I think in the solicits coming up, is a Valiant's greatest hits, where they bundle 100 pages of some of their best stories from all the titles. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that and just see if maybe that's my entryway into the Valiant universe, because I thought that's what this would be. And this is more of a stop sign than a come on, let's go. Yeah.
Yeah. I was hoping this was going to be something that if somebody was getting one or two books would be enough to really push them to go whole hog.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that.
It sold really well.
Did it? I mean, I'm assuming
thought,
so.
I thought I heard it sold out, I think.
Well, they're selling out and they're selling well.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a print-to-order business by and large. And really, the sales of this first issue, while interesting, it's really going to come down to, do people like it enough to come back for the second issue and keep going? Given over at Marvel, we see sometimes 50, 60% drops on second issues. I've gotten a lot more skeptical as to the value of the sales juice or sales numbers on the first issue of something.
Oh, yeah. What did you say? It's, you know, it's probably issue 4 or 5 before you really get a sense for what it's going to level out at, right?
Yeah. If you've got a bump on a fourth issue, that's usually a good sign. It's not a recovery, but almost a correction or whatever. But usually if it takes till the fourth, fifth, or sixth issue to start leveling out. Depending on the frequency, the more frequent, the longer it takes.
It was 68,500 copies. And for a Valiant book, that's pretty amazing because they're down around 10, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
So it was, you know, the rest, all the sales of all their other books put together was what Unity sold.
Where did you get that number?
Comic Book Resources.
For Unity?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting. I haven't, Valiant released a press release on that. I've been swamped this week, so I haven't looked. It wasn't in my numbers.
This is an October 29th post by them.
Okay, so they were doing it based on what they had gotten initial orders before they printed. Okay,
it might sell more than that, right? Because if that's at the cutoff,
that sounds like a final order.
Yeah, you're talking about over 70,000 then. Easily,
that's like on par with everything else they come out with. So that's great. This seemed like something that could easily be a breakout hit for them. But I am curious again how the second issue does. Does it hang on to those or not? But I think it would be good for Valiant to have a breakout hit. Sam and I were just talking about that when we recorded night before last.
So you're saying the other number ones, like Quantum and Woody, sold 70,000 as well?
No. That's what I'm saying is they haven't. I mean, EXO, I'm trying to think where its first one was. It was not that high by a long shot. I'm thinking it was more 30 to 40,000. I'd have to go look it up. But what I'm saying is take all of the other issues they're currently selling in like October, add them together, and I think it was below or around 70,000.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
So, I mean, that's good. But again, can they sustain or not? Hopefully they can, but I've got to imagine there are going to be some people who read this that decide not to come back for a second issue. I'm kind of suspecting you're going to be in that group. Am I right?
You are correct. You are correct. I will not check out issue 2.
That's understandable, but that's too bad because I would have... Whenever anyone does a crossover book, whenever they do, I don't mean specifically the publisher in question usually, but this is the kind of a title that should be a cross-pollination sort of a deal. Somebody comes in because they're following EXO. Oh, wow, there's the Eternal Warrior. I should go check him out. Oh, there's this other character. I should go check that book out, you know, and have it kind of be so great they get hooked on these fabulous characters.
Well, I haven't given up. You know, like I said, I am reading Quantum and Woody and Archer and Armstrong. And so that's two of their titles. And I am planning on reading that Greatest Hits that they're coming out with in a couple months and see what if that ropes me in.
That may be enough because maybe if you follow some of the EXO stuff from the beginning or something and that might have helped your enjoyment of this too. I can totally see that.
Yeah, but for me... I couldn't give this a 1 because of me not knowing enough about EXO, and you know, I feel partially responsible, so I gave it a 2.
To me, this is right kind of on that edge between a high 3 and a low 4, and I think I'm going to go with the 3 because I think they set certain expectations that they so fundamentally missed delivering on that I was very disappointed with that. And I am reasonably confident they did something at the end, which if it does turn out to be true, would frankly really kind of annoy me. So maybe I'm proactively penalizing it for unfair reasons, but you know, hey, my podcast, my choice. It's something though that, I mean, even an average book is worth picking up if you're into that specific sort of thing. If you want to sample the Valiant stuff, I think your idea of that book where they're doing the number ones and stuff, that's a great way to do it. And I really do recommend people check out what's going on at Valiant. They're a good publisher. They're putting out quality stuff.
Yeah, I every Quantum and Woody issue, I think I've read 5 now, has at least one laugh out loud, you know, true belly laugh, which is hard to come by in today's comic book writing. You'll get, you know, the occasional, you know, or shrug or something. But some of these are, they're just incredibly funny and just catch you off guard. And there's some great writing going on there by James Asma. So I definitely like some of the Valiant stuff for sure.
Oh, I'm a huge fan of Archer and Armstrong, Bloodshot and the Hardcore. The other books are good. They're doing quality stuff. And again, with Quantum and Woody, I mean, back in the day when it came out, people were just going ape over that. And I thought, that's good. I think this is a better run than that one. So, you know, others might disagree or whatever, but certainly a publisher worth checking out.
Yeah.
So what else did you get this week?
Well, I read the Batman 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Enjoyed that. And that had some good stuff. I really enjoyed the backup issue, the backup story with the Harper Row stuff. That was great. It's well worth a read if you haven't read it.
Totally agree.
New from Image was a Manifest Destiny number one, which I thought was going to be, you know, just as kind of a straight up history Lewis and Clark tale.
Oh, it was clear it was not going to be historically accurate. How about that?
Yeah. And it had some really fun fantasy elements in it. Some mystery that popped up and really great art. I really liked the art a lot. And it was a real pleasant surprise. I enjoyed that book. So I'm gonna check that out. I don't know Chris Dingus, who is the writer. I don't know him that well. And Matthew Roberts, who did the pencils. I thought his stuff was really good. And we're, like I said, pleasantly surprised. Not really sure where it's going to go. There's some definite mystery that we don't know the answers to that we're going to try to figure out together. So that's kind of cool.
Cool.
Astro City number six was great. I felt it was kind of a misstep on the last issue on five. I didn't enjoy it as much.
They did the mini, you know, subplots or teaser arcs or whatever.
Yeah, they had the one crazy guy in there that breaks the fourth wall, and I don't care for him too much. But this was kind of a mob story. Have you read this one yet?
Yeah, I have. I've read everything from this week. This one was basically like a Teamster type guy or whatever, union type guy.
Yeah, he's a Teamster guy. You know, his stripper wife from back in the day, and they were great characters. They had a great relationship that. Very believable, of course. You know, this guy's just knocking it out of the park. He can write these kind of characters like nobody's business. And Kurt Busiek's just awesome at this.
He's a great writer. He's done some brilliant stuff over at Marvel. Some good stuff, not quite as brilliant over at DC, but still very solid. But this is his A game by a wide, wide margin.
Yeah, and the ambassador character was just. He was great, you know. It was, you could just kind of see that he was just discovering this world, you know, and had that wonder and youthful enthusiasm about what he was mm-hmm. doing, and everything was so authentic. And for such a you know, an out there story to have such grounded characters, and this is issue six of this, and four of these. Maybe five of the six have been A's, you know, fives out of fives almost. And they've been so good. And so I forgive him when he spends a little too much time with the fourth wall breaker.
I'm hoping that really pays off at some point, but I'm questioning if it will. But Astro City is something I really recommend people check out.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
Over at Dark Horse, Resident Alien finished up.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really solid. I really enjoyed it, the way it paid off. I think there's a series in here. I really do.
I think so, but I think they're going to do a series of mini-series. And that I'm okay with that. While I'd like to get it more frequently, I think doing it in arcs and having them come out on time and maybe there's a little pause between or whatever, I think that's not a bad move.
No, it's better than, you know, what's going on over at Hawkeye and, you know, with these long breaks between issues and unplanned stuff. You don't want that. So when you plan them like Saga does, or like these guys, I like that. Yeah. And I really thought it was great, though. I mean, it's just a classic, like, fish out of water type of story. And he's part detective, part physician, and all alien, and it's a really fun story. And this was a cool little mystery that, you know, I was along for the ride and enjoyed, and it was satisfying, the ending.
Yeah, the first miniseries was great. This one was really good, and it's something that there's a teaser of where they may go next in terms of the storyline. I want to see more of this, and it's something I would like to see also potentially adapted as a TV or movie.
Yeah, yeah, I think there's something there, and I think TV series makes a little more sense. I think it'd be a fun procedural.
Yeah. Every once in a while, like the Hallmark Channel or whatever used to do like 2-hour TV movie, you know, detective type stuff or whatever. I could see this working in that format.
No, yeah.
Not necessarily on that specific channel, but I could see that format.
The Injustice Gods Among Us annual came out, and this was all Harley Quinn and Lobo, and it was a lot of fun. I think we got a little bit of Black Canary and Green Arrow as well. And they were fun together. The threesome of Harley, Black Canary, and Green Arrow, a lot of chemistry there. Lobo, I found a little tiresome with his main man dialogue insertions all the time.
It was authentic, though.
It was authentic. But this was really this was a really fun issue. The art was by three or four different artists, and you could definitely tell, you know, as it transitioned from one artist to the other. But yeah, I don't really expect great art in Injustice, so I'm there for Tom Taylor and see what he's going to write about. So it was fun. It was a fun annual.
There's something about the way they tend to draw Green Arrow in this series that just seems, I don't know, a little off. And I'm not saying
a lot
wrong.
Of it seems rushed. It really does.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it just seems rushed. Yeah.
Some of it's rushed. Some of it is the character model I think they've chosen to go with or whatever. It seems different than we're getting either in the mainstream universe, the Arrow universe. I don't know. There's something about it that just seems, again, not wrong, but clearly it's this universe's Green Arrow, if you know what I mean. So, but still enjoying that.
Yeah.
And that's a book. You're right. You're coming for the writing, not for the art. Obviously, it's got art and it's decent, it's competent, it's good, but that's not the main draw.
It wouldn't be a weekly comic spotlight if I didn't mention Thor: God of Thunder. Number 15 came out, and it was still good. We had appearance by the Frost Giant. We're getting drunk and drinking a giant under the table, so it's good clean fun. And some battle scenes, some good battle scenes. So this is winding. I think this was the third of five in the story arc. So we're past the halfway point, and we're going to be finishing this storyline up, this Melekith storyline, in the next couple issues. So still a lot of fun.
Did you read Protocol from I guess that was Boom?
Protocol Orphans.
Yeah, that one from Boom. Yeah.
Was that that one? Yeah.
What'd you think? I loved it. I thought that was a great issue.
Well, that was pretty good, yeah. I'll probably check out another one. It was cool. It felt familiar, but you know, it was still well executed. And
the concept of taking orphans and raising them into super spies and stuff has been done before and will be done again, no question about that. But I thought they sold the concept well. They established it well. They had a couple of twists, just in terms of the parents, the grandparents, those sorts of things that I thought worked really well. I'm looking forward to the next three issues of this because it's a miniseries. So very
interesting. But the whole dad granddad dialogue, I think they could probably figure out a better way to do that. It gets a little annoying. Did you not think so? Everybody referring to them as dad all the time.
I think referring to him as dad actually played out because it was very much don't disappoint your dad. You know, in the paternal pressure aspect of it. And referencing the grandparents as, you know, whoever's sponsoring them or whatever. And the sense of family obligation as a very clear, somewhat heavy-handed way of manipulating these kids. It gave it a little bit of uniqueness. Was it a little overdone? Yeah, maybe not. But it worked, and it played well. So I enjoyed it. I was really impressed with this. I picked it up because it sounded interesting, but they knocked it out of the park much more so than I was expecting.
Yeah, Boom's got some great stuff, you know. They've got a lot of titles. And, you know, if they put him out on time, be happy.
Yeah. And then they usually do a decent job with that. Another one that...
Both superiors were really good, too.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, the superior stuff, they continue to be firing on all cylinders there. That's one of the highlights over at Marvel. Another one I'm really enjoying that I tried out last month, just as a, I'll give it a shot, you know, whatever, pardon the pun. Shoot First from Dark Horse. The Secular Humanist Occult Obliteration Task Force. And the basic idea is they've got mythological, quasi-religious, supernatural entity incursions. You know, again, kind of like how Pacific Rim had the Godzilla-type things. These people have, you know, more religious-based, belief-based type deals. And they have weapons that can be used to attack them or fight them or whatever, but only non-believers can make the weapons work.
Okay.
And they've got one guy who was Muslim, but, you know, in the events of the first issue, just saw some of this, ceased to have faith, and then was able to use the weapons or whatever in an emergency situation. They kind of bring him on board, and now, again, if he starts to believe again and have faith, and it almost doesn't matter in what, but having that, it, suddenly he can't use the weapon. You know, it's fun. It's interesting. It's a unique twist on the crisis of conscience and belief in religion and so forth like that. It's a lot of fun. It's much better than I was expecting, both in terms of the story and the art. So something I recommend. What else did I get this week that was...
I thought Federal Bureau of Physics was pretty good, issue 5.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I thought 4 was kind of just kind of laid there, but I like this one a lot better. And something I can, you know, can see continuing to improve, and I like the direction it's going.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be curious where that title is at maybe a year from now in terms of what all it's built up in its mythology and how people are liking it.
Well, it'll be new number 1, of course, by then, but...
Or maybe more than a new number 1.
To be on its second number 1. Now, what did you think of the new uniforms in All New X-Men number 18?
I liked them. I thought they were good.
Feel a little Robotech type style.
Didn't really think so.
Yeah, I thought they were kind of weird. They didn't really. I thought it was, you know, different. Certainly different.
It reminded me, actually, of the Legion of Superheroes.
Okay.
Because if you look at them, they've got kind of that center cutout, the stuff on the side, and there was a period where the Legion had that sort of a motif. I think it was during the Legionnaires era, actually. And they had a Legion logo where they've got the X logo. I thought the coloring was interesting. I would have used different colors for the particular characters. But this goes back to me watching too much Power Rangers. I'd have put Cyclops in red because he's the leader, you know. Beast in blue because, one, he turns blue later, and two, he's the smart guy, you know. Probably would have done Jean Grey in yellow because, well, pink would be cliche. Not sure about the other ones. I'd have to think about Iceman and Angel. But this is a fun issue. It's good. I am amazed they are keeping these characters in this timeline in terms of at some point they need to address how that all plays out in terms of who then grew up to be the older X-Men we've got here. You know, eventually resolve that time paradox. But they've gotten a lot more story out of this premise than I thought they could.
Yeah, yeah. Walking Dead 116 was great. Mm-hmm. Really psyched about this accelerated schedule and getting more issues more quickly. And but this one was fun. Nice battle scene. Nice opening battle scene, and some really cool action stuff. And great, it's a great companion piece for the show, which I'm of course loving the show. And it's probably been one of the best seasons they've ever done so far. It's been really awesome. So it's cool to go back and forth in the different worlds and different characters, but some of the same similarities and go back and forth. It's really, really great. And this has been a great storyline so far, this All-Out War.
This All-Out War really seems to be Kirkman back on his A game. I've been feeling since really the end of the Governor saga that he's been doing good stuff, but that he could do better stuff just based on what we'd seen previously.
Yeah.
I'm starting to feel like he's back at that point. Hopefully it pans out that way, but, you know, I'm enjoying it, and I really am excited about the increased frequency, because I think that'll help the story momentum a lot, and just be good all the way around.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's just a really great series, so I'm loving it. But yeah, it was a solid week, a lot of good things out, and the head of the list are the two Superior books. I mean, Superior Foes and Superior Spider-Man 21, they were just really excellent.
Yeah. No, both of those are good stuff. Some of what they did in Superior Spider-Man, resolving one of the crisis that Peter was having, I guess, issue or two back, the way that got resolved, I thought was really interesting.
That was wonderful.
Did not see that coming, and I almost felt like I should have once certain things fell into place.
I didn't put it together at all, and when he did what he did to solve that problem, I just thought, that's incredibly great, and it's very satisfying, and I can't talk about this on the show.
Well, it's smart writing that's playing fair. In other words, it's not one of those where, you know, you get to the end of a murder mystery and the butler did it, and you're like, wait, the guy had a butler? What the hell? Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing drives me nuts, whereas here, you know,
you had everything you needed to know to figure it out if you wanted to.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I love that. So that, again, they're doing some great work over there. For me, it was a really good week, really big week. In addition to all the stuff we've talked about, I also got Wolverine, which was a lot of fun. World's Finest was a lot of fun. Star Trek Con, really enjoying that. The Smallville Season 11 stuff is great. They did some interesting stuff there. What else?
Star Wars was really good. Brian Woods just kicking butt on that comic. It's great.
I'm not getting that Star Wars. I'm getting the Star Wars.
Yeah.
So I've cut back on that universe for a bit. But I've heard great stuff about what he's doing on that too. The other thing I got that I wanted to mention, and Star Wars is close enough that I'll bring it up, is it's actually Star Trek related. The first of those Starship figure collectible magazines came out, and I got that, and it is the NCC 1701D ship. And these things are really, really nice kind of model replicas, if you will, that are, I don't know, 5-6 inches long or something. They're not to scale with one another, because, I mean, they're doing everything on up and down from a runabout to Deep Space Nine. So they're scaling it to where they all end up at the same size, even though that's different scales. But really, really cool. And the other thing I got that I haven't had a chance to flip through yet is the Super Graphic book. It's a visual guide to the comic book universe, done by Tim Leong, who did Comics Foundry magazine a couple of years
ago. Yeah, the one we talked about a little while ago, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I finally picked this up. Like I said, haven't gone through it, but looks very pretty, very cool.
You'll love it.
Yeah, I kind of figured I would. That's why I got it. Got the final issue of Kronos Commandos, Dawn Patrol. That was a lot of fun. I'm wondering if they're going to do a follow-up to that or not. It's by Titan Comics, who did Number Cruncher. All in all, really, really good week. A lot to be reading these days. A lot to be reading.
Yeah, a lot of fun. But we could always read more. And, you know, by the time this comes out, it'll be... Will this come out before Thanksgiving?
Yes, this will come out on the 25th, which is the Monday before Thanksgiving. And, of course, then we're going to record the following day for the next episode. We're recording early, so we don't record on Thanksgiving. We usually record on Thursdays. So while there's a lot to read, I'm going to a convention between now and then here in town, here in Austin. It starts tomorrow. So I'm not sure how much I'll have read other than what we're going to review for next week.
But that's okay. I'll do all the talking.
You usually do. No, it's fine.
And, well, I mean, if you're going to be stuck with family, you know, you're going to want to get away. So during Thanksgiving, you just... Or sometime that weekend, you get the nice long weekend. You just kind of go off, grab your previews catalog, look at the advanced solicitations online, and call in a few for the previews picks and email them over to John. And it was a great issue last time, or a great episode last time, and I think we can double it. Let's double it. So we want to make it so difficult on John that he has to break it up into multiple – episodes, and he has to hire help. We'd like, I can get part-time interns maybe to come in and help him with it. That we want to flood him with all these great picks.
I usually put it up on a Wednesday, but there's the Friday slot too. If we have enough, I do break it in half. I've done that a time or two in the past. And it's funny because there is so much great stuff. And we've got such a diverse group of listeners and tastes and stuff that the listeners have that, you know, not everything is represented, and I'd like to hear what people are excited about and why. That's how I get hooked on a lot of new titles.
Yeah. I mean, I listen to a ton of comics podcasts. I listen to a lot of them. And what you're doing with this is very unique. Doesn't exist out there, but to having all those clips and all those different voices and all those different tastes in comics, it's very rare, and it's way better than two guys sitting around flipping through their previous catalogs, saying what they want to get. It's better than that. It's so the way it's balanced and you know, it's such a diverse group. I mean, that last episode was just awesome.
Well, and speaking of that last episode that covered the November previews, the DCBS order forms, if you are a DCBS customer, are due on the 27th, which is the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I mentioned that because I was realizing, oh, I don't think I've sent mine in yet. So just reminding people to think about that if they're a customer of DCBS. And if you're a customer of your local comic shop, try to let them know as soon as you can what you're interested in so they can fill out their order to Diamond and make sure they get what you want them to get.
I sent my DCBS order in today, and they have a lot of specials and clearance stuff. So not that I don't think they're sponsors or anything, but I'm just saying there's a lot of good deals, too, if you want to check them out over there.
They're DCBS is not a sponsor of the show, but they are certainly friends of the show. I've been dealing with them for 10 years now and getting weekly shipments for them. And, you know, part of why I don't have them as a sponsor is I want people to realize that when I say great things about them, I am not getting paid for that. I get no benefit out of that. They just do a really good job.
Plus, it's annoying on a podcast when you have to fast forward through the first 5 minutes that because they're all commercials.
Yeah, I will admit I got soured on sponsorships of podcasts when I was listening to one that was a 5-minute podcast and at least 3 minutes were commercials.
Yeah.
So I said, No, we're not going to do that. We're all about comics here and related toys, books, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, it was a great week worth of stuff. I'm looking forward to the next batch. I'm looking forward to the Austin Comic Con, which I will have just been to by the time we record next and by the time this episode goes up. Anything else? Does that do it?
Good stuff.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Batwoman 25 from DC, Young Avengers 12 from Marvel, and Doctor Who, Prisoners of Time 12 from IDW. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.